Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 55, Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm, of course, Josh Nason, writer, editor, podcaster for the site, former writer for Bloody Elbow, Fight Magazine, and a bunch of other sites that no longer exist, coming to you from an undisclosed location somewhere in Seacoast, New Hampshire, but one that's not too difficult to find. Hopefully, you guys are having a great week and a big weekend planned. If you feel like couch potatoing this weekend, there's plenty of mixed martial arts action, especially going on Saturday. And of course, the biggest mixed martial arts fight of the weekend is not in an octagon, not a fence around it. It's going to be on Sunday with Brock Lesnar versus Bill Goldberg. I think we all know that is the biggest MMA fight of the whole weekend. And that's a shoot. That's no work, brother. But coming up this weekend, obviously, for real, there's two UFC events happening on the same day for some reason. Bellator comes back with a very interesting title fight. But of course, we have a lot to look back on this past week with the UFC 205. There's still storylines and so many things happening as a result of what we saw in Madison Square Garden, a show that definitely scratched the itch. It hit home runs, whatever stupid analogies you want to use. It was great. And helping me break down the show and kind of the experience leading up to it and then what happens out of it, I decided to recruit a New Yorker, someone from the born in Brooklyn, and someone that knows the scene better than no other. He is Mark LaMonica from Newsday. Mark and I talk for about 45 minutes on a wide variety of topics, including obviously UFC 205, the lead up, the results, and just not just the Conor stuff, but obviously Chris Weidman. Where does he go from here? Habib Nurmagomedov. Obviously, that is a fight we'd love to see with him and Conor McGregor. Whether or not that's going to happen, what Mark would like to see next. Conor potentially holding up two divisions for the better part of 2017. What UFC needs to do to succeed in New York long term, both in MSG, but also with this Brooklyn show coming up in February, and kind of what they need to do to remain a strong force in that market, and all kinds of other good stuff as well. It was an excellent conversation. Hope you guys really enjoy it. And without further ado, let's get to Mark LaMonica of Newsday. Well, UFC 205, after all that buildup, all that buzz, all that fun is, you know, finally in the rearview mirror. But we're not ready to let go of it just yet, so we wanted to bring in someone this week that is was really attached to the story in a lot of ways, helping report on it and being there in the hub of the action for so long, the build to actually get MMA legalized in New York City, or New York State, rather. And then finally it was, and he was there last Saturday night to capture all the action. We welcome in from Newsday, Mark LaMonica. And Mark, we'll start you out with the really tough questions. So, you know, if you have a seatbelt there in the chair, I'd probably buckle up. Do you ever get confused for former WWE star Bubba Ray Dudley, a.k.a. Mark LaMonica?
Yeah. fortunately, no. But that it has been a running joke for a good number of years with some of my friends and family who know it. And if I remember correctly, according to when someone first told me about that, I think he grew up in Massapequa, which is right near where I live nowadays. So I'm just fueling the fire even more.
So in other words, if someone does one of these crazy scavenger hunt things, they have to put you guys to get a picture of you two guys together. I mean, that would what the kids say, it'll break the internet, right?
Yeah, don't put that out there yet. All right, I don't answer my door when it knocks at night. All right.
Very good. Well, let's get to the real good stuff then. And obviously UFC 205 this past weekend, Madison Square Garden. For those that are listening to this podcast, obviously you know all of what happened. Conor McGregor coming through. We had the favorite son, local son, Chris Weidman, having a tough night at the knees. I don't want to even say the hands of Yoel Romero, the knee of Yoel Romero, and so many other things. This show and everything got built up. But I want to ask you, you were part of the build up in terms of reporting all this stuff with how MMA finally got legalized, the whole fight and all that. And then finally it came to a nice head fruition this past Saturday. I mean, is there kind of one encompassing statement that you could have that kind of would, I guess, yeah, all encompass everything that got to get there, that took to get there, rather, on Saturday?
I think for me the defining moment was on Friday at the weigh-ins. You know, there's over 15,000 people there, and you know, your media there, you're there early. We got a nice seat. I'm just looking around, and I see Mark Ratner walking by, biggest smile in the world. Looked like a, you know, proud grandfather holding his grandson for the first time.
Yeah.
Just smiling ear to ear. You know, he's the guy who obviously, you know, he spent all that time. He does all the work getting it legalized. And just to see how relieved and fulfilled he looked, to me, I'm like, wow, there's a moment right there that, you know, you're not going to see on television. I'm like, that's the one that's going to stick out for me right there. That tells me everything I need to know about how big and this event is, and how kind of cool it was to finally come together.
When did you first start covering MMA?
2008.
Wow. Okay.
Give or take, something like that. I'm old. I feel like it was 08, maybe 09, you know, off a year, but definitely in the aughts, as they like to say.
How was it for Newsday or for another publication?
For Newsday. I've been here a long time.
Yeah.
Started with my good friend of mine, Joe Fernandez, was into it.
Yeah.
And then he got me into it. And then here we go. It's just been, you know, what really first drew me to the sport. Obviously, you know, Joe's like, hey, come watch this with me. Like, all right, cool. What I really liked about it, and to this day I think is one of the coolest things, you don't really see it in most other sports, you could be getting destroyed for the first 14 minutes of a fight, and then just slip a quick hook in there, or just, you know, do some quick jiu-jitsu moves, sub them out, and you're done, and you win. And that guy, you know, the loser goes home, he's got a pretty nice face still, and the winner goes home, he's bashed up, bloodied, broken nose, black eyes, and but he won the fight. Just like that, out of nowhere, you know? I mean, perfect example is obviously Sonnen Silva. That's the perfect example right there.
Right.
And you just, like, to me, that's the coolest thing about that sport is, you know, in basketball with a minute left, if you're down 20, you lost. You know, if you're down two touchdowns with a minute left, you're pretty much going to lose that game every time.
Right.
You know, a minute left, you're down 4-0 on the cards and about to go 5-0, you still can win.
So was it a tough sell to the paper at the time to start covering MMA? Because again, back in 2008, if people remember back then, it was growing in popularity, but obviously did not have this cachet that it has in 2016 as we sit here now. Was it a tough sell, or was it something that they were interested in, but more from that angle initially of kind of the odd attraction as opposed to maybe a regular sport? Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a tougher sell to get into the actual newspaper. On our website was a lot easier. Obviously, we've got plenty more space online, right?
Yeah.
But we were fortunate in that in 07, Matty Serra went and did what he did and knocked out George St. Pierre to win the title. And he was a local guy from Long Island. So we had that going for us, which kind of made it a little bit easier. We're like, hey, listen, this Long Island guy just became a world champion. Hey, all right, let's get something in the paper on him, yeah. You know? And then he goes and I think he coached Tough after that in what, season 6, I think it was, or something. So yeah. We had a blog going with him for that. So we were fortunate to have the local angle help us make that transition, that jump, pretty quicker than we probably would have normally.
Did you think it would be, what, almost a decade after you first started kind of getting into the sport? Do you think it would take that long to actually see the UFC come to New York State?
You follow that story long enough, and at some point you just start saying, okay, whatever. When it happens, call me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, certainly, you know, last week was pretty cool to just sit there, look around, and be like, I didn't have to take a plane to get here. I'm taking the train in and out. I'm sleeping at home. I'm making breakfast with my kids in the morning, going to work and coming home late at night. And I'm in my own bed. This is awesome.
What time did you actually get to bed on early Sunday morning?
What day was Sunday? I think we left the garden a little bit after 4:30 in the morning.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Every minute was worth it for us, I think.
Yeah, I remember back when UFC first came to Boston, and I think it was 2012, if I remember right. And that was the Frankie Edgar versus BJ Penn 2 show. James Toney fighting Randy Couture on that show. Yeah. Obviously, first time that it had been in Boston. And I was covering that show for, I might have been for this website or it might have been for somebody else, but I remember, I think the press conference started around 2:30 in the morning, give or take, and I think I ended up getting home like around 4. So those East Coast shows and these West Coast people, man, they have no idea how lucky they have it. Us East Coast guys are like staying up to all hours of the night and these shows go so late that main event not starting until it was like 1 or 1:30 this past weekend. They have it lucky out there in the West Coast.
Yeah. But I'll take that if I'm staying at home.
Yeah.
That falls under my fair trade principle right there.
Yeah. So the experience itself, obviously you had covered shows before, the shows in New Jersey, I'm sure other shows all around and so on. Was it the venue? Did the venue make a difference for you? Like, or what did you feel a difference in covering the show? Was it the venue and all that? Or tell me about that.
I think that with this fight card, outside of, I guess it was in the prelim show when there was two longer delays just because the fights ended so early. Mm-hmm. But even at that point, I felt like this card never lagged. There was never like a, you're like, oh, is this fight over yet? I think the only moment where it was kind of dull, for lack of a better phrase, from an atmosphere and energy level, was the first or second round of Joanna's fight. I think the crowd was kind of coming off of, Chris Weidman had just lost. He had a great ovation. The crowd was really into his fight. And then after he lost, it was kind of took the energy out of the crowd for a little bit. But then that Joanna and Carolina fight certainly picked up. And then I think the energy level was up the whole time.
Yeah. Tell me, the crowd itself was interesting because obviously from home, you know, you're seeing a lot of, it looked like a Vegas-esque crowd when it came to kind of close cage side, a lot of suits that you usually don't see at a lot of these shows. Well-dressed people, obviously, in those seats and very expensive seats by cage side obviously means probably got a little bit of money there and access and all that. What was your sense of what the crowd makeup was? Was it a lot of quote unquote high rollers and kind of the normal, so to speak, fans up in the nosebleeds and in the upper sections, or kind of what was your makeup of what the crowd was like? And also, for I guess expertise level or just knowledge of the game, what was your sense there?
You saw the suits on TV too, huh?
Yeah,
I did notice that certainly around cage side and those first few rows up, definitely a lot more. You know, part of that's New York. You're going out on Saturday night. You got a couple bucks in your pocket. You know, part of it is that, but there definitely were. I did notice a lot more suited folks. Closest to the cage than in the past. I would say overall, though, what I was really happy about is there was none of the put them in the body bags. Mm. Nobody completely gawking at the Octagon girls and yelling out massively inappropriate things. At least I didn't hear any of that stuff. Maybe on the other side, I don't know. But I thought the crowd was into it from the get-go. It was pretty crowded. Definitely more than half full, I think, at the start, or pretty close to half full for the first prelim fight with Carmouche and Chookagian. And then the crowd was really into it the whole time, you know, except for like that one round I mentioned. But yeah. I think they knew what they were talking about. They knew what they were watching. There wasn't the, you know, usually you get, you know, an MMA event, obviously you got a certain sort of a bloodthirst, so to speak, you know, and it's just in such a huge amount of people, 20,000 plus, someone's going to yell out something silly, you know, but you didn't really hear that much at these fights, at least, you know, not from press row. And usually you can hear it, you know, obviously someone's in the upper deck somewhere, they're going to be yelling, but, you know, overall, I thought the crowd knew what they were watching, enjoyed it. And they were packed in, man. There was not an empty seat to be had anywhere.
Right. Right. Yeah. You
know, if they could have sold standing room in the hallway, they would have.
Yeah.
And someone would have bought it. Someone exactly. would have bought it and be like, this is awesome.
Well, our Dave Meltzer on a show this week earlier was saying that they should have done a Maybe rented out the is it the Paramount Theater that's right next door, that Madison Square Garden? I think that's what it's called, and done some sort of like either additional closed circuit or done some additional kind of like additional seating, maybe charge $50 to $100, and he's just again basing this on past wrestling shows and other shows that just maybe there was they just probably didn't even think of it, that there might be an opportunity to make a little bit more money just based on the close proximity to the venue too.
Yeah, they definitely could have had a viewing party in the theater at the Garden, which is all, it's, I guess, technically not the same building, but it's all in the same structure. It's just, you know, either you go up an escalator or you go down an escalator, so to speak. You definitely could have put another 5,000-6,000 people in there.
Yeah.
I think it holds up to 6, so I'm not entirely sure, but that's where they had the press conference on Thursday. You definitely could have done something there with that, without a doubt. I don't know. Kind of surprised. Yeah, now that I think about it, I know they've had viewing parties for big fights in Vegas and things. Kind of makes me wonder why they didn't do that now that I think about it. But I had a feeling they were just so focused on this show and selling and making the arena experience as best as possible that they just said, let's just worry about this for right now and let's go for the biggest number we can.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start pulling out the other stuff later. So maybe the second show they'll do that.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get to that second show here in a little bit. But obviously, we'll talk about kind of the, even without two notable fights in Kennedy, Rashad, and Cerrone, and Kelvin Gastelum being taken off the show. The show, as you mentioned, even as a viewer, it didn't lag at all. There was, and I think from start to finish, there was what was great was there was names that people knew for the most part in every fight, even the opener with Liz Carmouche, obviously are people familiar face. People remember her from that that first Ronda fight. Jim Miller, Thiago Alves, a couple of guys that have been around the UFC for a while. In nearly every single fight, there's at least some sort of familiarity there and obviously some notable results, especially when you get a little bit further up the card to the pay-per-view portion. What was your key takeaways in terms of the Conor winning the two titles, of course, that was huge. But what were some of your key takeaways from the results of the night?
Mm-hmm. Khabib. Mm. Khabib looked good. he was fighting angry. I mean, I remember there was a point where, I might have been the third round, I'm not sure, he had Johnson up against the cage, and it was right in front of us, and I'm watching him. I'm on an angle, so I'm watching Khabib. I'm like, I think he's talking to Johnson right now. I think he's punching him, stopping to talk to him, and then punching him again, stopping and talking to him and punching him again. So I email our editors in the back. I'm like, make sure you ask him about that. Sure enough, that's exactly what he was doing. He was telling him something. I forgot what he was saying, something like, you know, just submit. I don't want to keep hitting you or something like that. Right.
Yeah, he said something. On the video, he was saying, they showed afterwards, like he was saying, it's my title shot and all that. But yeah, that was interesting stuff. So that's amazing. You were able to pick that up, being cage side.
Yeah, it was, just had a great angle on it. I'm like, that's interesting. You don't really see that a lot. I thought he looked fantastic, especially if the guy wasn't fought and, I mean, he fights, feel like he fights once every 3 years. I know it's a little bit different. I know it's a little bit less than that, but,
right.
You know, with injuries and things like that. But he looked amazing. I thought Wonderboy and Woodley both elevated themselves in that fight. I mean, that's fight of the year candidate right there. It was amazing to watch. Woodley really impressed me in that fight. You know, he had a game plan. He did not let Wonderboy do what everyone expects Wonderboy to do. You know, he didn't kick as much. I feel like, you know, Wonderboy, one of his early kick attempts is when Woodley took him down in the first round. Mm-hmm. And after that, things changed a little bit, I thought. He was a little, I don't want to say hesitant, but I think his game plan changed a little bit. And I remember watching Woodley. Woodley fought that entire fight backing up pretty much. He was on his back feet, back legs the whole time. And then he was talking about it afterwards, why he was doing that, which I thought was interesting. Saying he can easily, and from that point, you know, he can push Wonderboy around more than not, which I thought was interesting. I don't know. I still don't know how Wonderboy got out of that guillotine.
I know.
I think it was in the fourth round or the third round. I can't remember anymore. It's been a long time.
Right, right.
But, I'm watching. I'm like, oh, my God, how is this happening? What? He's not tapping? And then he just popped out toward the end and finished that round on top. That was an amazing round, an amazing fight. I think those would probably be the two big takeaways. And Frankie. Frankie looked great. Mm. Frankie, you know, does what he always does. Toughest little guy in town, right? He gets knocked down, he gets beat up, still keeps coming after you. And he definitely put on a show as well, I thought.
Yep, I agree. Let's talk about Chris Weidman, though. I mentioned him when we first opened up. And, you know, when a guy, he didn't look good in his, the last fight against Rockhold. Looks a little smaller, maybe a little bit less muscle, a little bit more tone, but just doesn't look as big as a 185er as he used to. He goes in there, gets a jacked up Yoel Romero, big dude. And obviously people kind of know what the score is there. If you can extend Romero out and hopefully to wear him out, maybe you can get a chance to wear him out, maybe get a decision, or just, you got to be careful that power, the wrestling's there, just all that. And Weidman, you know, he was holding his own, doing pretty good. And then, you know, Romero cracks him with that knee, and it is just lights out at that point. Blood just pouring out of Weidman's mouth and nose, and it's crazy, the run of Chris Weidman and being, you know, a New York guy, you know this, is that it was surprising when leading up this, he almost wasn't on this show, and it took the now former owner of the UFC, Lorenzo Fertitta, to come back in, somehow negotiate to get him in the show, on the show, against Romero. Finally gets to New York, and in this opportunity, just isn't able to pull it off. What was your sense of kind of where Weidman goes from here? Just was the moment just too much for him? Just kind of one of those things? Or what's your takeaways with Chris Weidman after this big show?
Well, I don't think the moment was too big at all. watching that fight and looking, it's 1-1 going into the third round. It was an even fight. I scored it that way. I think most people did. And then looking at the scorecard afterwards, it was exactly, all three judges had it the same, 19 up going into the third. I thought it was an even round. I feel like that shot that Romero hit, which was awesome, was a clean, amazing shot, was kind of like the exact same thing Weidman did with Munoz. Guy comes in, cracks him, lands it perfectly, busts him up, fights over.
Yep.
The difference being Weidman hit him with an elbow versus Romero hit him with a knee. The one thing I did notice is I feel like, you know, Romero was stuffing almost every takedown, and Weidman kept shooting for that single leg. And, you know, Romero in the post game, his post fight even said it. He's like, you know, he was getting really comfortable with that stuff, and I was just timing it, and I nailed it perfectly.
Yeah.
So I don't know that, you know, and this probably comes off as me sounding like a homer, right? Because I'm the local guy. He's a local guy. But
well, you're allowed. You're allowed.
You know, to me, I don't see that fight as anything more than he hit him with a great shot. That same fight could have gone either way. Who knows what would have happened in the third round? But you're definitely tied going into that. So it wasn't like Romero was destroying him before that. I think Weidman won the first and Romero the second. I think that's how it scored. Mm-hmm. So I think he hit him with a crisp, perfect shot. You know, you could go through and I'd have to watch it again. I haven't seen it since the live event. But I kind of feel like it was just, you know, maybe I missed something. Maybe it was something on the replay that I didn't see, but he comes shooting in. He's open, and Romero just timed it perfectly with that flying knee. And, one guy's going this way, the other guy's going that way, and then, boom, you know, he's not getting up from that.
Yeah. So we now have Weidman on a two-fight losing streak. Obviously, the Rockhold loss was his first loss back December 2015, and coming back in this fight. Almost a year later, against Romero, Weidman, obviously he's going to have to take some time off. That isn't the type of injury that he's going to be able to come back like really quick in January or something like that. It's going to take a little bit of time to heal. But what, I wonder kind of what you put him in next, because obviously you have a lot of guys there. You have Jacare, who has earned this title shot, is just kind of waiting, and now Romero has jumped that gun, and now he's going to be next against Michael Bisping. Could be as early as January, could be in February, depending on what Bisping is saying. You have, again, Weidman just coming off this loss, but he's still of name value. There's still a couple other guys here at 185. What would you like to see Weidman do next? And would you, I've heard people mention 205, and maybe he goes up to 205 now and he just says, forget this weight cutting or anything. I'm going to go up and fight at a heavier weight class, maybe add a little bit of more marquee value to a division that sorely needs it at light heavyweight. What would you like to see him do next?
I mean, 205 is interesting. I don't know that he's going to do that, though. I don't know. I feel like, just from having, you know, spoken to him so many times over the years, I feel like he's more, you know, no, I'm going to get my belt back at 85. It's more about, let me prove myself again in this spot, as opposed to doing something different. You know, a lot of fighters feel like they're getting chased out of the weight class in some respects.
Yep.
I don't know that, you know, I've never spoken to him about it, obviously, but, you know, the only time I've spoken to him about fighting at 205 is when he offered to fight John Jones when, was it the Henderson fight or something? The fight that someone had pulled out of, I think, and he offered to fight.
Yep.
Yeah, the 151 fight he offered to fight at Jones there. I mean, so much is going to depend on if Bisping beats Romero. I feel like if Romero wins and any title fight is up for grabs, Rockhold, Jacare, Bisping wins, you know, it's a little bit different, I think. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of interesting matches. I mean, you even got Gegard Mousasi. Let's say he wins this fight. He's going to...
Yep.
He's a top five guy. I feel like, you know, Weidman's going to be a top five guy, fighting a top five guy, his next bout. I don't know that it's going to, I doubt it'll be February in Brooklyn, but you never know. Like you said, you know, that kind of cut takes a little bit of time to heal.
Right.
So
right.
We have to see on that one. I haven't seen medical suspensions yet, so I'm not sure if, what the number is, but you know, that doesn't really mean too much.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. I think these medical suspensions are basically just, you know, they're written in pencil, and can get erased, pretty easily along the way. Not exactly people checking up on things. Before we leave 205, I did want to ask obviously about the star of the show, without a doubt, Conor McGregor, winning that second world title in pretty dominant fashion over Eddie Alvarez, a guy from an hour away, but found himself, basically in a foreign land with, all the McGregor fans. The Irish came over in droves for the show. And it was, you know, Conor again, he did exactly what he said he was going to do, and now sits in this very unique position where, you know, you mentioned with people jumping divisions and holding up titles, essentially he is holding up two divisions in a lot of ways. There's contenders up and down the stack at both featherweight and lightweight, and there's going to be more just kind of piling in queue. We have no idea what Conor's going to do next. Is he going to fight? We're going to get this third Nate Diaz fight. Is Khabib going to finally get a shot, which a lot of people now seem to be wary of because they think McGregor may go more the marquee value as opposed to maybe the tougher fight. There is you know, this Frankie Edgar out there at 145. We'll see what happens. Max Holloway, Pettis. And then people are talking about 170 pounds with George St. Pierre still as a name. People are throwing out there Tyron Woodley, all this stuff. He is a supernova in so many different ways, something the sport has not seen, I don't know, ever really in a lot of ways, but just he's just attracting mainstream media, but also is a little bit of a problem in that he's holding up a few divisions. But regardless, Saturday night, he ended that night the King of New York, without a doubt.
Oh, without fail. He dropped Eddie Alvarez three times in the first round, and mm-hmm. I feel like he only hit him four or five times total in that first round.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Eddie's come out and said he fought a dumb fight. He got out of his game plan right away, and that was Conor related. You know, Conor dropped him that first time, and all of a sudden everything changed, and he just picked him apart. I mean, watching the combination that he finished the fight with was just beautiful. You know, I mean, it was just perfect. Left hook, right, left, right, left. Boom, done. He was as good as he's ever looked and as good as you can see in a title fight from anybody, I thought. You know, what does he do here next? You know, who the heck knows, right? It's pretty much whatever the UFC allows him to do.
Right.
You know, they've created some of this here as well. Obviously, you get a star of Conor's power and who can bring in numbers consistently. He should get a little more leeway, and he's definitely getting it. You know, two names you didn't mention. One, I'm glad you didn't, and he's a retired boxer. But the other name you left off is Jose Aldo.
Yes, yes.
You know, he's still technically, I guess technically he's on the UFC roster. He's not retired. Who knows? Is it grandstanding? Is it negotiating? Who knows what's going on there, right? I mean, there's another fight you might want to see. I got a feeling, though, I mean, who the heck knows what's going to happen, right? I kind of like, if you go to 170, though, you got to give up something.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to say, hey, he's the first guy to ever do it. Well, he's only the second guy who's had a chance to do it.
Right.
That kind of, you know, the first guy was BJ Penn. He didn't get it done against St. Pierre. You know, and the second guy who's had even been allowed to do it is McGregor. So could someone else have done it? Maybe. But, you know, at some point you have to look around and say, you know, yes, this is a business and we're trying to make as much dollars as possible, especially with new ownerships who just dropped $4 billion. You know, they probably recouped half of that quickly on the 205, especially if they were getting a cut of concessions. So I don't think they were.
Yeah.
You know, you got to just say, hey, I defend the belt. You know, I know everyone says, oh, he's this great champion. He's this great champion. And he's really not. If you, you know, depending on how you want to interpret champion, he's an amazing, great fighter who's won titles. Never defended one of them.
I saw that on your Twitter the other day. I mean, yeah, he is without a doubt, he is a great fighter. As someone that obviously that one loss against Diaz, but you're right, he has yet to defend a title yet, being the obviously that featherweight title and obviously the lightweight title. And one of the things, you know, with the two division accomplishment, if he calls his own shot and he holds on to both belts, you know, that's it, you're really hoping for in this era, like two title defenses per division per year. And sometimes depending on injuries, that can even be wishful thinking. If you get one, sometimes that's a good thing. So if you're thinking, okay, if we get two title defenses per year for division, that's four McGregor fights. If he can pull that off, is that realistic? Yeesh, you know, I don't know. It would seem a little bit tough to do, but then you have all these guys, like I mentioned, and you're right, Jose Aldo, that was a guy that's the interim featherweight champion, kind of in this weird period of stasis. And yeah, I mean, there's just so many guys and so many fights, and there's so many challenges at two divisions. It's almost like he's going to have to make a choice. And I don't want to see him fight at 170 because I just think he's a little outsized for that class. Obviously, a GSP fight would be very interesting to see just as a spectacle. But then again, that obviously backs up that cue even more. But I don't really need to see him go for a third title because there's so many other fights I want to see him. I would die to see that Khabib fight just because there's, as you mentioned, Khabib had such a dominating performance on Saturday and was just... He is so good, so intense. He wants that fight. He was doing his best to kind of sell it afterward. And I think there's money to be made there with Connor no matter what. But, yeah, with the new owners, I can see him trying to maybe push this third Diaz fight. And then, you know, we're still wondering what's going to happen with all these title defenses in 2017 and beyond.
Yeah. I mean, Khabib's the fight to make from a sports standpoint. I don't know his number. I don't know if he fights enough yet to have a big draw, but he'll definitely bring in the MMA folk. But here's the thing: you could put Connor against. I don't know. I'm looking at random objects in my office right now. You could put Connor against his stack of Post-it notes. You know, it's going to sell a million pay-per-views, and it's going to, you know, 10% of those people are going to come from Ireland to see that fight. It doesn't matter who he's fighting.
Right.
They support Connor. To put him up against, you know, the third Nate Diaz fight just does nothing for me. It's just like, maybe if it's for the lightweight title, okay, maybe there's a little more cachet to it. We could say at least he defended his belt finally. But I don't know. I'm not clamoring to see that fight. I'd rather see something new, personally.
Yeah.
But I don't make decisions. I just write what decisions other people make.
And right. And the retired boxer you were talking about, I assume you meant Mike Tyson, right? Is that who you meant? Is that out there on the table too, right?
I'd be more interested in hearing about that fight than any other fight, to be honest with you.
Oh my God. The Mayweather stuff, we'll leave that on the back burner for now. So before we move on with 205, kind of just some last thoughts. You live in this market, you kind of are this market, you understand this market. you know, there is they're coming back to Brooklyn, as you mentioned, in February at the Barclays Center, and then rumored to be MSG again. I would assume it's probably going to be a yearly stop there, maybe next fall. And what is, you know, long term, the UFC, what do they need to do to survive and thrive in this New York New York City market?
I think they're going to be just fine doing what they do in every other market. I mean, if you look at, they didn't need New York to be a successful business. They didn't need to be here. I mean, of course you want to be here. It's the biggest market. Look what they did. They had the biggest gate ever in their history and the biggest gate for a sporting event at the Garden ever. So, you know, obviously it's a success. What do they need to do to keep that going? I mean, you're going to need to bring a star every time. That's why this McGregor fight was so, that's why this card was so big, because of him.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of the card was amazing in and of itself. You only had two title fights on it. But you sit there, like, this is New York. This is the first show. You guys have promised something amazing. And even though every fight, even, like, take the 13 fights that you originally scheduled, right? 26 fighters. You knew all 26 of those fighters already. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned it earlier. But you needed that star. You needed Conor, Ronda, John Jones. Ronda and John Jones aren't around right now, right?
Yeah.
So you need that big star. When you come to Brooklyn next time, you know, it's the second show. It's a little bit different. Obviously, everyone will compare and say, oh, well, look at this card versus that card. You know, what's different here? Look at the pricing. It's different there. You know, everyone's just going to make the natural comparison because what we do. However, you can get away, you know, can you get away with, say, Stipe as the main event, the heavyweight title? Possibly. It's possible. I don't know that Conor would be ready for that one, but they say he is. If you load it up with a little, you know, put a Frankie on the card and maybe Weidman's ready again, or heck, run back the welterweight title fight again. You know, you got that. They'll be, you know, they're going to Albany in a few more weeks.
Yeah.
So they'll be all, and then supposedly, you know, Buffalo is certainly in the mix. You got Long Island, Nassau Coliseum, the renovated one's supposed to open in April. Mm. You know, that's a very viable spot for fights here. I mean, I think you're going to see them go everywhere. I think the Garden's going to be a yearly stop. They kind of have to in many ways, just because you're not going to turn away another chance at $17 million again.
Right.
And then, you know, let's say they come back next year. John Jones is in the mix. Maybe Ronda Rousey's in the mix. Maybe there's a new star that emerges. Yeah, it might be kind of hard in 8 months, but you never know. You put Cormier against Jones at the Garden, you know, everyone's going to be interested in that one.
Mm.
So I think they're just going to keep doing what they're doing, have a monster card, and, you know, throw a big headliner at the top that's beyond just the sporting, just beyond just the fan. Like, you know, if you put Wonderboy and Woodley headline a card at the Garden, probably not yet for the New York fan. You know what I mean?
Yep.
The MMA fan will be like, this is a great fight. Of course I want to see that. But I still think you're going to need that big star for New York. That's right. Probably me being completely, you know, there's your New York bias right there for you, right?
Well, pure
geographic bias. But, you know, if you look around at, you know, and what they did here for this card, again, like I said, the natural thing is going to be compare the second card to the first, no matter what it is. Even if the first card stunk and you're like, oh, the second card, you're going to compare it anyway. That's what we do. Right? That's how we process things in our life. And that's how we feel better about ourselves each day.
Right.
You know, but I think you're going to have a big card, another big star at the top.
So you say bias, I say perspective, right? for the uninitiated and those that don't know, the difference, which is there really a difference between the Brooklyn quote unquote market and an event of Barclays and MSG, or is basically you're going to draw the same fan base from A to B, maybe just a little bit pricing and a few more fans, give or take?
Yeah, I think the latter part there. I think it's, you know, the MMA fan in the area isn't going to care. Listen, I'm going to the fight. UFC's coming. I'm going to Brooklyn, or I'm taking the subway to Manhattan. You know, it's just a matter of, am I taking a train or a subway or a cab or an Uber? But for the average person, I mean, I saw local TV stations at the Garden all week. because it's New York and it's the appeal, and you're like, oh, check this out, this is great. Now, does that happen at the second card in Brooklyn? It's going to depend on the card more than it did for this first one, I think. I mean, Brooklyn, the Barclays is the hot new spot. It's an awesome arena. You know, if you ever want to go see an event there, definitely do it. It's, from an arena standpoint, it's very cool. Great sight lines, all brand new, you know, wide open concourses and all that kind of stuff. But there's still something about when you say New York City, everybody thinks, you think Manhattan, you think the Garden, Times Square, Central Park, you know.
Yeah.
Brooklyn, I mean, listen, that's where I was born, so of course I'm partial there, right?
Yeah.
But a little different.
a few more beards and a few more latte coffee shops and things like that, right?
Yeah. A little bit.
Well, let's talk about this upcoming weekend. We obviously, this huge, huge spotlight from last weekend, and there's always the poor events that come afterward, and not only do we have one event, one fight night, we have two fight nights for some reason, one happening in Brazil and the other one happening in Belfast, in Northern Ireland, of all places, coming after obviously the McGregor buzz from last week. And, you know, it's devoid of a lot of star power, we'll put it that way. No big surprise given the past few months and what's to come. You know, kind of looking over the shows, we have Gegard Mousasi versus Uriah Hall, the rematch. So we get that to headline that Ireland show, and Ross Pearson's on that show, and there's not a whole lot on that Belfast show. And then obviously later in the day you go to Brazil. There's a few more notable fighters. You have Ryan Bader versus Little Nog. The mindset here is possibly if Bader can win this fight, he would earn maybe the next title shot, because obviously John Jones is in limbo. We'll see what happens with Cormier Johnson coming up in about a month's time. Thomas Almeida comes back for his first fight after that big loss to Cody Garbrandt. Claudia Gadelha comes back after a loss to Double J. And, you know, there's a few more names on the show and so on. So between those two shows, what is does anything have your interest for this weekend after this past weekend? Or what are you looking at for results here?
Uriah Hall always interests me when he fights. And that's not my geographical bias there, since he's a New York guy. To me, he's an attraction still, because you want to watch him fight, because what am I going to see? I have a chance to see something amazing right now. I have a chance to see this guy blast somebody. And so, I mean, you know, you always think about this highlight knockouts from Ultimate Fighter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he put one on Mousasi. He nailed him. You know, Mousasi ducked. People call it lucky hit, whatever. It's MMA. Every knockout's lucky hit, pretty much, right? To me, you know, when I watch him fight, I'm like, I have a chance to see something. I'm going to be like, whoa, what was that? Like, you're going to give me a reason to hit rewind on my DVR button. To me, so he's always interesting to fight, to see fight. Now, sometimes you don't get that. Right. Sometimes it's a, you know, dud of a fight, but that's kind of that my fair trade rule right there. All right, it was a dud, but you know what? Something could happen now. Something could happen. He could throw some crazy jumping, spinning thing, and you're like, what the heck just happened? So that's, to me, that's there's an appeal there.
The
Almeida fight.
Go ahead.
The Almeida fight interests me, just to see how, here's this guy who was, 21-0 or something like that.
Yep.
What does this guy do after his first loss? And he, if I remember correctly, Garbrandt knocked him out pretty handily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of like, well, here's this guy. He was the next. He was supposed to be the next guy. What does he do now? How does he come back? Where is he at mentally? And then how does that translate in the cage?
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Uriah Hall, going back to that fight, he is looking to snap a two-fight losing streak, and Mousasi is looking to extend a three-fight winning streak. And his last loss over his, the only loss over his last six was that loss to Hall. And he is, obviously, you're right, he's right in that top mix for, you know, a floating around a title shot, interesting fight territory. And he's seen, he's been fighting for, my God, his first pro fight was back in 2003. He's been this consistent guy just that wins and wins and wins, but has never really been a big star, never really got a, obviously, a UFC title shot, but after all this time, he seems to be kind of closing in. So that's good. And yeah, the Almeida fight, great point about that, in that it's always interesting to see what these guys do, these young guys, when they come back, you know, because a guy can be this uber prospect, top prospect, and all of a sudden that one loss, the manner in which he loses and everything changes, and all of a sudden he goes to that next fight, doesn't put out a good performance. Next thing you know, no one really cares about the long winning streak before. It's all about what they're seeing now, and someone could have two losses in a row. So, yeah, I think with, you know, with bantamweight still kind of, you know, with some interesting names in there, he's, you know, he's got to come up with a big win on Saturday, no doubt.
And, you know, you mentioned Musasi as well. You kind of look at his last couple of fights and stuff. He's starting to talk a lot more now.
He is.
I feel like he's starting to get a little more out there. I feel like, you know, in the past he'd fight and he was just kind of, you know, yeah, won my fight and that was that, you know, I'll fight it wherever. Now he's flipping cameras off at the weigh-ins, talking trash, you know. It's kind of like he's like, listen, I got to make some noise for myself here to get that title shot. Because you're right, he has, you know, he's something like 41-5 or something like that in his career. And an insane record. And, you know, people kind of like, yeah, Musasi. You know, but yep. I think he's starting to now, he's like, hey, let's start making some headlines with some crazy stuff. You know, if he wins, you see what happens. See if it plays out.
So, to me, the biggest fight of the weekend that is not in a boxing ring, obviously, for those that follow boxing, Andre Ward and Kovalev fighting this weekend, that's a big show. But for MMA fans, I think the biggest fight of this weekend is actually in Bellator. And they have a big lightweight title fight on Saturday night going up against Saturday. Is going to be, if you're an MMA fan and you thought last weekend was packed, I mean, this week, three separate events, you're going to be like from morning to late at night, you're going to be packed with fights, no doubt about it. Michael Chandler defending his lightweight title against Benson Henderson. And Henderson is, I don't want to, unlikely isn't the right word for title challenger, but just it is, his Bellator career thus far has been a bit of not exactly how he want to start it. A head scratcher, I guess you could say, but you know, he comes in and fights that welterweight title fight against Koreshkov and just does not look good in that, overmatched for almost the whole fight. And then he comes back in this fight against one of the Pitbull brothers, a title eliminator, and wins via this really fluky way. Ted did not look good leading up to that point and now finds himself in a title shot against Michael Chandler. And really, I think win or lose, he's really got to come on and put on a memorable performance. And I know that in the past, sometimes he's been known as mainly a decision fighter, someone that goes more seems to be point fighting than actual, you know, looking to actually take someone's head off or so on. I think he is Chandler obviously has a lot to lose with a title, but I think given all the buzz about Benson Henderson going into this free agency period, then signing with Bellator, I think he's got a lot to lose on Saturday night. What do you think?
I don't think you're wrong there at all. You know, you do mention there was this whole thing like, oh my gosh, Benson Henderson left and he went to Bellator. He was, you know, one of the early few guys who did that. Excuse me. Yeah, you're right. In this title fight, you're just like, who is this guy fighting? You know, what happened here? But he's got an ability to rise up, that guy. And I think, you know, he knows what's on the line here, obviously, besides just the title. I think you're going to see an old-school Benson Henderson here. I could be 100% wrong on that, on how that plays out. But I think you're going to see, you know, old school Henderson doing what he does, you know, a little point fighting, but also not afraid to mix it up. And then, you know, you see what Chandler brings. Chandler's a tough guy. He's a guy who can, he can definitely do some things and make people work in there, as we've seen in the past. I think this has the potential to be a really good fight. Mm-hmm. Not a Bellator Dada 5000 kind of fight, but
yeah.
You know, I was just trying to summon the courage to say that name.
Yeah,
I think we have a chance here for it to be a really good fight.
I think so too. And he's looking to extend a 3-fight win streak and look for the first successful title defense he's had since winning the title in his last fight against Patricky Pitbull back in June 2016. The other name on this show that is of interest, obviously Michael Venom Page, guy that has been brought along quite slowly, you could say, by Bellator, fighting at welterweight. And, you know, they're picking the right guys for him to fight. He is finishing guys. He is fracturing skulls. He is doing everything that you'd want for a secondary promotion, I guess, to have these interesting guys that can co-main event a show, and there's a little bit of intrigue, and we really don't know. He hasn't been thrown to the wolves yet. Going in there against who is he fighting in this this one? Fernando Gonzalez, who's a veteran's been fighting there for a while, and you know, not a name, but it's another guy. And I think, assuming that MVP wins this one, I mean, I don't know what you think. I'd like to see him. I think it's time to take the next step up to someone of a little bit more of a name value, a little bit more of a veteran. I don't know if that's a Paul Daly type. I don't know if that's a, you know, somewhere in that mix where I think it's time to kind of start moving things ahead with MVP a bit. Because, you know, I've seen what he's done against this lower level competition. I want to see what happens when the heat gets turned up a bit.
No, I think you're absolutely right. You have to at some point, you know. It's fine the way they're bringing him up. You're building him into a name. And then he becomes a name, and that name and the name is like, yeah, but he hasn't fought anybody. All right, well, now he's a name who fights somebody. And if he beats him, he's a bigger name, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think what Bellator's doing with Page is actually pretty smart. I think it's probably maybe their smartest promotion of a fighter so far, you know, just off the top of my head. You know, let's build this guy up into something. And, you know, it's not just TV anymore. You know, it's how many people are retweeting his stuff out there, you know, the social media aspect of him. I feel like, was it with the Santos Naga? He rolled like a dragon, was it Dragon Ball Z or something like that? Yeah, he did?
It was a Pokemon thing.
That's right. You know, so that had everybody talking. What they were saying is, you know, everybody had different for each person, but, you know, you bring him up now. He's a guy who can, like you said, he's a guy who can co-main. Like, oh yeah, I know that name. I know Michael Venom Page.
Mm-hmm.
For that casual guy who's just flipping through channels and you watch in Spike and you say, oh yeah, Page, I remember, that's the Pokemon guy. Maybe you turn in and you watch his fight and then, like, wow, this guy's great. Now you're going to watch his next fight, and his next fight is against somebody who everyone else has heard of. And you keep bringing him along. If he wins it, he wins it. And if he doesn't, you're like, okay, well, now we know who he is.
Yep.
But if he wins that fight, now you've got all of a sudden he skyrockets exponentially about, you know, if he beats a name fighter as something of a name already.
Yeah, he'd be looking to go to 12-0 on Saturday night and 7-0 in Bellator. So yeah, packed Saturday, and obviously for those that can't get enough MMA, again, they're just wall-to-wall stuff on Saturday, so great stuff there, and great stuff on this show. And Mark, before we let you go, we'll give you a chance to channel your inner Bubba Ray Dudley, talking back to Mark LaMonaco a while ago, and give you a chance to promote, obviously, where people can follow you on social media, and what stuff you have coming up in Newsday that people can check out.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. Yeah, come to newsday.com/sports and click on everything. You know, you can click on MMA, you can click on the Yankees, Mets, Jets, Giants, whatever you want. Have a field day over there. And you can follow me on Twitter at LaMonica Mark.
Great stuff. And Mark, we appreciate you taking the time. Hopefully you get a little bit of sleep, catch up on a little bit of sleep from this past weekend. Hopefully it was great for you, as it was for all of us, to finally see UFC in Madison Square Garden. And now you're it feels like the story is now written, and now can go on the next chapter. So good stuff, and thanks for all the great reporting. And thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week.
Oh, happy to do it, Josh, anytime.
All right, big thanks to Mark LaMonaca for dropping by. You can follow him at LaMonaca Mark, M-A-R-K, on Twitter. Again, he's not Mark LaMonaco. We cleared that up, not Bubba Ray Dudley. But I would like to have Bubba Ray Dudley on the show. I think that'd be a lot of fun. You know, I think you guys like that. We'd chat it up. I've always been interested in talking to Taz, even though he seems to think that MMA is a work. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll have a conversation about that someday, but yeah, big thanks to Mark LaMonaca for stopping by. And let's see, again, coming up this weekend, all kinds of shows. One thing I noted on Twitter the other day I thought was kind of interesting was that you have this big slot of events coming up starting in January, and there is no main events, and in some cases, not even a fight card announced for these shows in January. And January, my friends, is 2 months away. Yeah, how about that? 2 months away, this first show, January 15th at the Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix, UFC Fight Night 103. Right now, the default main event is Court McGee versus Ben Saunders. Let that sink in for a second. And then a week after that, they go back to pay-per-view UFC 208 from the Honda Center, Anaheim, California. And then the week after that, UFC on Fox 23, emanating from the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado. So you need some names, and there's not a lot of champions that are going to be available. I was going through the list earlier. The most likely person, I guess, to slot on that first one could either be Stipe Miocic or it could be Michael Bisping. Bisping just, I think, a few days ago saying that he was ready to come back and fight maybe in January or February, if I saw that right. But assuming it was January, you know, if you do a Bisping-Romero fight, if you can pull that off that might be a short turnaround time. But it's crazy. I feel like we used to get months and months to kind of have at least some build for these main events. And now we're talking like, you know, 2 months, 30 days, 45 days. Maybe that's a new plan by the new owners, but it is it's running tight, especially with training camps and all that stuff. And yeah, so I guess maybe we'll see Bisping main event that 208 show. Stipe is possible. If you can get a Stipe Kane fight, that would be obviously a great headliner for that show as well. But one of the results of having these stacked shows like we had this past weekend is that these shows afterward, especially the middling shows, tend to suffer a bit. So I think it's going to be a while before they kind of restack the deck and get some of these people in there. Holly Holm also has not fought in a long time. I was just thinking about her the other day. Kat Zingano not fought in a long time. Maybe they can make those two happen for that UFC on Fox show. That'd be a good main event. So I guess it's my hope is that we're going to have some stuff announced pretty soon, and we're not just going to see like a rash of cancellations or anything like that. Obviously, that would not be good for the pay-per-view schedule, but we need some fight cards filled in. And like for those three shows, I think we have all of three fights announced maybe for those three shows, if you don't count TBA versus TBD, which always I know is a popular one. So it'll be interesting to see. We have, 2 months to go, and we still have, let's see, counting this weekend, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 shows left before the end of the year. Wow, 8 shows left. That is a lot. And champions are basically all booked up. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting few months to start off 2017. And it's crazy enough to say it is 2017 coming up in just a month and a half. So with all that being said, we have a lot of stuff to get to this weekend. Hopefully you guys have a chance to watch it and get a chance to watch the stuff you like, fast forward past stuff you don't like. There's a lot on TV, and especially when you count, for those of you watching Survivor Series on Sunday. Also, TakeOver is happening on Saturday night. So man, this is a weekend where hopefully it's raining where you are, maybe snowing, and a chance for you just to sit inside, do nothing, and watch TV until you pass out. Or some pizza, some beers. You go have some fun. Big thanks to Mark LaMonica for stopping by. We'll have him again at some point in 2017. Thanks to all of you for listening. And that's it. This has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.